This week's episode is brought to you by Social Print Studio. They're the photo printing service that we've been using for years, and now their Print Studio app makes it even easier to get your pictures off of your phone and into your hands. Plus, you can take 15% off of any order with the code YHL15 now through December 9th. Just go to socialprintstudio.com/YHL to get started.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Things are getting a little creepy today as we share why we're convinced that one of the beach house bedrooms was haunted. Plus, we hear how one family found gratitude, patience, and a sense of adventure through a year-long minimalism challenge.
Well, fast forward 1 week and now I'm the one who's getting under the weather.
I think you're going to be awesome. We're just recording this podcast preemptively in case you're not awesome.
Yeah, I'm a little less than awesome at the moment. I don't know if you can tell on my voice or not. I can feel it in my throat. But in case I have a case of the Sherry's from last week.
I'll remind you that I felt perfect. I just lost my voice. So
that's
you
true.
Have a little bit of congestion. I think it's unrelated. Don't blame your wife.
Well, whatever it is, I have a whole assortment of things left over from last week to try.
And I should get you a big gooey marshmallow so you don't eat the chalky, dehydrated marshmallows from the hot chocolate.
That's true. That's what I need stat, guys. Well, we're also recording this episode a little bit early this week because we've got a busy week ahead of us with our master bathroom. There's a lot going on this week. We've got demo happening, like the full complete demo, like to the point where we will not be able to use the bathroom at all anymore.
Right. Not only removal of the toilet, but like removal of tub with sledgehammer. That's like apparently the pro way to remove this kind of tub. They don't come out in one piece. They're really heavy. That's also how we're going to remove the floor with a mini demolition hammer. And we need to get under the floor because rough-in happens this Thursday. And rough-in is when the plumber sets up like the new drains, like the drain for the tub and the shower. The shower valve. Valves are getting moved, shower heads in a different spot, all that stuff. So the walls are not only busted open, but the floors are because they run a lot of plumbing through the floors. And somewhere in there also is the electrician who's coming because they're doing a lot of stuff on the ceiling. Doesn't really affect the floor at all, but there will be some wall switches and some wall sconces going in. So it's like a revolving door this week of pros that we're hiring and managing who will come into our house and assist us. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, but we do what's called general contracting these projects. We're not contractors with a license, but we GC it. And what GCing means is that it saves us money, but it doesn't save you work and effort. Let's be clear. If you hire a contractor, it's kind of like they do scheduling. They do damage control. If somebody runs late, they reschedule everyone. They're always on the job site organizing everything. If a part doesn't show up, it's on them. Like they are the people running the show.
But yes, we are effectively the contractors for this. So all the management of things in terms of when people come in and if problems arise, like that all comes to us. It also is our responsibility to fill the gaps between the subcontractors because there are certain tasks, like some of the framing things, like framing out the new shower or the new closet door that a plumber's not going to do, an electrician is not going to do, and it's probably too small to hire a third person to come in. So those are things in this instance we're going to try to tackle ourselves.
Right. We're going to prep for the shower. We are going to change the location of a door and reframe it out. We're going to add a frosted door to enter the bathroom. There are a lot of things that we're doing. Again, a contractor would want this entire job. They would want to say, I want to redo your entire bathroom. And they would charge maybe 10, 20%. I know even some who charge 30% on top of the amount you'd pay the subs yourself and the amount you'd pay for materials yourself. They'll add that fee on top for their time and effort, which I completely agree. It is a big deal to manage that.
Yeah, it's money well spent if you want that expertise. Like if you want someone else to be in charge of the circus, that can be well worth it. But this is an instance, especially because it's here in our house that we're living in, like we're here to help take care of it. It's an easy thing for us to take on.
Well, yeah, maybe, I wouldn't say easy.
As soon as I said it, I knew it was wrong. It's an obvious thing for us to take on, maybe.
I was going to say it's a trade-off we're willing to make to save money. It doesn't mean our work week's going to be easy. We already had to change a meeting we had for Friday because we're going to have electricians and maybe plumbers in here that day. So we had to move our meeting to next week. So it is affecting our work schedule for sure. But we're going to make it worth it because we're going to save some money.
Yeah, it should be an eventful week. Hopefully good eventful for the most part.
I've hated our tub since the moment I stepped foot in it. So I'm very excited to see it say bye-bye.
Yes. But in honor of Halloween this week, because Halloween is going to be the week that people are listening to this, I feel like we should tell people a scary story.
It is actually very spooky.
Yes, you shared it with one of our friends recently, and she texted you in the middle of the night and said, I can't stop thinking about your haunted room.
At 2:30, I got a text. I didn't see it till the morning because I have Do Not Disturb on my phone. But she was like laying in bed, eyes full wide open, thinking about your story. It involves the beach house. For a while, people said, hey, any haunted stuff? And I was like, no, they're very old houses, but nothing at the duplex, nothing at the beach house until this moment.
Yes, and I'm going to set the stage by saying, I don't believe in ghosts, but I don't not believe in ghosts. I could be convinced, I guess, is my point.
You're in the gray area.
Right, but I'm not, like, actively ghost hunting. How about that?
Why don't you have one of those meters that detects ghosts? Because I feel like that would make me want to marry you more if I met you and you were a ghost hunter.
Well, it's too late.
It's too late. I married you anyway.
You already made the decision whether I am or not.
Maybe that's something you'll get into in retirement.
Exactly. A few years. Anyways, let's tell you the story. So this is at the beach house. You know, we've been working on that middle bedroom recently. And that is a room that hasn't been used a whole lot in the 2 years since we furnished the beach house because our kids, ever since we finished the bunk room, both sleep in there and we sleep in the master bedroom. So that room only really served as like our daughter's temporary bedroom in like the couple months before we made the bunks. But over the summer at one point, there was an evening where our son wasn't feeling super well. And so we decided that would be a good night for them to sleep in separate bedrooms. Because, you know, if you have kids, you understand when someone is kind of under the weather, they don't always sleep the best. And we didn't want our daughter to be disturbed in her night's sleep. Like, we wanted her to get a good night's sleep in case our son woke up a lot in the middle of the night. So we said that evening, we're going to have you sleep in the middle bedroom. And even though she had slept in there for a few months happily before the bunk room was done, suddenly there were a lot of objections she had about why she wasn't comfortable sleeping in there. For one, she said there was a spider in the corner. So like I did the dad thing and I got the spider out of the corner to, you know, help her be more comfortable sleeping in there. Like I didn't want to make her sleep in a room that she didn't want to sleep in.
Right. And then she said, well, I don't like that the door opens a little bit. And she pointed to the closet and I was like, oh, honey, the closet doesn't have a latch. It's a 100-year-old door. We had latches for every single door in the house except for that door. And we figured, eh, it's a closet. It doesn't have to fully close.
Yeah.
And so she was like, I don't like that it can like move a little bit in the night or open a little bit more, look like a shadow. And I was like, oh, that's another easy thing to fix. And I did the mom thing and I put like a basket in front of the door to hold it closed. And I was like, see, problem solved.
Yes. So we thought we were making ground with her. But then she said the thing that scared her the most was that the other door, and she pointed to the attic access door in the ceiling. You know, we have one of those pull down ladder accesses in the ceiling in that room. She said that door in the ceiling also opens in the middle of the night. And so at this point, we're kind of like, I don't know where this is coming from.
Right. I was like, honey, if you don't want to sleep in that room, you can also sleep in the front bedroom because we have this other bedroom that wasn't being used.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, it's fine. And I said, and maybe what you think the attic door opening is really just a shadow of the closet door because the attic door is kind of above where the closet door is. So I said, now that I've put something in front of the closet door and that won't open or look dark, maybe that was like reflecting a shadow on the ceiling that made the attic door look like it was open or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a parent, you've probably done this before where like your kids just need some help kind of rationalizing a situation maybe and like understanding things that might spook them when it's dark or whatever. So that's sort of what happened that night. So she went to bed just fine in that room. She had a great night's sleep and we felt like, you know, a high five. We worked through this with her. Fast forward to the next morning and I'm in that middle bedroom getting something and I notice that there's some insulation on the floor. This is like those little blown insulation pieces and that's what's insulating our attic at the beach house. And so I noticed that on the floor and I was like, that's weird. That wasn't there last night when we were having this conversation and it only really comes down when the attic door in the ceiling opens and I'm pretty much the only one in the house who can reach it.
And suddenly John's like, Sherry, can you come here?
Yeah. And I'm having all these thoughts like, I don't have an explanation for this. Except for what our daughter said last night about it opening in the middle of the night. And so I'm starting to feel like, one, a little bit concerned. Again, I don't believe in ghosts, but I don't not believe in them. And two, feeling bad that like I thought I'd done the right thing and rationalizing these fears she was having about the room and maybe they were real. So Sherry and I kind of looked at each other, didn't know what was going on.
Well, I said, clearly it's haunted.
Sherry jumped right to the other end of the spectrum.
I was like, dudes, there's insulation on the floor in the morning. Must have been a good ghost. That was my rationalization. Clearly no one mean is up there. It's a Casper situation that we have going on.
We can only hope. Well, luckily, our kids were able to sleep together that night because our son was feeling better. We could get her out of the middle bedroom. And until Sherry and I could get to the bottom of our middle bedroom mystery, we didn't at least have to subject our daughter to sleep in this strange bedroom.
Right. We were like, let's put a pin in that. But by the way, our daughter's going back to the bunk room.
No, not that I think anything's going to happen, but just in case, let's keep her protected.
In the room that nothing weird ever happens in.
Yeah, there's no access to the attic in there. And so it was not until, I would say, a few weeks later till we solve the mystery. So,
you ready for this, guys? Yeah,
keep in mind, this was a whole time where Sherry and I, in the back of our heads, maybe in the front of yours, were like, okay, so we got a haunted room.
Yeah, I was like, okay, check. It's an old house and there's a friendly ghost.
Yes, I was in there another day during the daytime when it was all light and safe. And I forget what I was doing, but the door was closed. The door to the bedroom was closed and the air conditioning kicked on upstairs. And our HVAC unit is actually in the attic. So it's like kind of right above that room in the attic. And I don't know exactly the science behind this, but I guess, you know, some sort of air pressure imbalance from the air turning on in the attic.
And the
door being closed to the bedroom. The attic door just kind of like popped a little, like just like breathed a little breath.
It burped, basically.
Yeah, that's it. It burped, definitely.
It burped some insulation out. And we were like, oh, it's not a ghost. It's just a pressure that when that kicks on and only happens when the door is closed, which tracks with it happening the one night she slept in there because we close the door when our kids sleep. That's like a fire safety thing. We've always done that. So every other day of the year, no insulation on the floor. Day someone sleeps in there, insulation on the floor.
Yep. So mystery solved. They're not ghosts. I can now confirm ghosts are not real.
Until the next time we have a run-in.
Yes, but we did have a little bit of a scare.
Yeah, we did.
But we are going to move on to something else now. We're going to give a ring to Miranda Anderson. She is a blogger and author and podcaster. And also, coincidentally, she lives here in our hometown of Richmond, Virginia. And I'm not going to give away why we're going to talk to her because I think it'll be pretty obvious as soon as the conversation starts. So we're just going to give her a call.
Hi. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Psyched to talk to you, three podcasters all cozying up to the mic.
Also three Richmonders.
I know.
Although not technically original Richmonders, I should
point
out.
None of us are originals.
I feel like half of Richmond at this point is not.
Well, and I think the other thing that we all have in common, which will kind of be the crux of our conversation today, at least to start, is that we have been sort of on these simplifying / minimizing journeys over the last months and for you years. And the reason we wanted to talk to you is like, you've written a book about it, Miranda. Like, you're certainly more an expert than us.
Well, that is nice. I mean, you guys do a pretty good job, though, of taking every single thing that you hear about it and learn about it and implementing it into your lives.
John loves an experiment. He really does.
You're on it. I love it so much. And that idea of experimentation is where I started. Like, all of my minimalism started with short experiments just to see what it was like to simplify.
I think, you know, for listeners of our podcast, people who've been listening for a while, they may remember us talking to an author named Kate Flanders last year who had done this year-long shopping ban experiment where she didn't buy things for a year. That was a big turning point for us to learn from that. And we did like a month-long experiment. But it was so funny to find out that coincidentally you had done something similar years ago.
Yeah, I loved that interview and I was really interested listening to it because I hadn't heard of her or her book either. But at that point, we had already completed our year without shopping. And so it was really interesting to kind of compare and contrast experiences. And it's different for everyone. And even for families, I think it's different. But that's part of what the beauty of minimalism is figuring out what's right for you and your family. And then being able to sort of disregard what anyone else is doing or what society tells you you should do.
Is there an event or happening that led you to that moment where you were like, I need to make a big change. I'm going to do this huge experiment. Or was it kind of like a slow curiosity?
So it started as kind of a slow curiosity survival because I had had my third baby and two kids is a lot and three kids is like a circus. And I realized that I had so many things going on and so much stuff to manage, I needed to start breaking it down to only the essentials. I heard from a friend about the idea of an edited capsule wardrobe which Sherry, you are like the queen of this, but back then this was 2013 and I hadn't ever really heard of the idea of choosing to have less clothes. Like all I had ever heard was have as many as fit in your closet and you can afford. And it immediately sounded like relief. Like, I don't have to go wading through a closet full of stuff that I don't necessarily like or that doesn't really fit. So I started out of kind of survival of I want to be able to take care of the things that matter a lot in my life. And the real kicker came when I was just up one night going through these cabinets in my kitchen. I mean, there were only four cabinets, so it wasn't like a whole room worth of stuff, but I, within four small cabinets, took out and got rid of over four garbage bags worth of belongings.
Were your cabinets empty at the end of that?
No, that's the weirdest part. I mean, I found bizarre things that I was like, just using them, those cabinets, as a place to put things away to get it off the counter, I guess. And I thought, gosh, we definitely don't need any more stuff. Like, that, what just kept coming to my mind was, we have so much stuff. We have so much stuff. So that was where the experiment started.
What specifically came out of those cabinets that you were like, I can't believe I have this and I don't need it? Like, sometimes people just need an idea of what is excess or what they can live without.
Yeah. So there were tons of party supplies. I love throwing parties for my kids. And so I had made like this banner and that banner and this poster. And I'm going through it all thinking, well, we did this party. Like, am I going to have another zoo party? Like, when is that going to happen? And why do I need all of the things that go along with that specific theme? I can easily donate those to like a craft reuse center and have them out of my house and somewhere that someone else can use them. And I think that idea of, I don't need to have all of the things that I've ever had, and I don't need to continue to own and take care of the things, even if I like them or used them at one time, it doesn't mean that now is still that time, that they're valuable and useful. And it helps to think that there are other people in a lot of cases that could use them right now.
Yes, I'm nodding my head to that too, because I had this weird thing where I saved every gift bag I was given. And so I shared the volume on Instagram. It was like an Insta story. And the world was like, never in your life will you need to reuse that many bags. And I was like, it's true, but like, it feels wasteful to throw a bag away and then buy one at Target when I could save them.
Totally.
And so I pared them down to like half, because I knew I'd reuse some of them.
Still too many.
Yeah. John thinks it's still too
probably
many.
Probably.
But the key for me was finding a place for the other half that made me feel happy. Like what you're saying about the joy of giving them to someone else. Here in Richmond, there's a place called Scrap RVA.
Yes.
And they take that stuff and kids do art with them. And so that made me want to give them all of it. Like, suddenly my reason to save this went out the window when I thought of these deserving kids and this wonderful program. And I called them up and they were so excited to take them. And it was so easy. I literally was like, I wish I had done this years ago. And I want to tell everyone about it because it's such a great program.
If only you had a podcast.
If only there's some way to tell the people.
Geez, someday we'll figure it out.
But I feel like maybe one of the keys is like discovering the end of the sentence, like figuring out who they will benefit, and suddenly it all clicks into place and it's easier to let go.
Totally. Almost every major city has some sort of creative reuse center. Scrap RVA is awesome. I've donated hundreds of yards of fabric to them as I've gone through my own craft room and sewing supplies. Just this last week, I was going through our towels and I donated a bunch of old towels. I finally, after like 10 years, decided it is time. We got fluffy new towels for our house. And I got rid of all of our old towels and I took them straight over to the SPCA. And it was the same exact feeling of like, now I don't feel bad that if I need a dirty towel at some point that I don't have one on hand, because all of these forgotten animals now get to use them.
It's almost like the stuffed animal trick we use for our kids sometimes, because our children are so quick to assign life and personalities to these inanimate objects, these stuffed animals.
We've all seen Toy Story. It's very sad when someone forgets
right
about a toy.
But sometimes when we talk to our kids about all that they have, we talk about, well, you know, is this stuffed animal realizing its best life, living at the bottom of a basket? I think we can use that same psychology on ourselves, that like a beautiful piece of furniture, if it's not being appreciated and living its best life in your attic, maybe it's time for it to go find a new destiny, a house that will love and care for it. And that will help the process of you letting go of it.
Totally. And might I add that you guys are raising very compassionate humans.
Well, I won't brag, but they've seen all four Toy Stories.
I also thought of something when you were talking about the towels. I think you just said it matter-of-factly, but it resonated deeply with me because you were like, it was time to treat our house to new fluffy towels all at once and get rid of all the old ones. all at once. I think that is a total life hack that we all underestimate. It's like, at one point, my kids had 1,000 pairs of socks and underwear, and they were like from 3 ages back. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go get them new stuff for their new sizes. They're growing all the time anyway. All the stuff is worn and it's old, and all the old stuff was either donated if it was in good enough shape or tossed because it just was like, you know, rags.
Underwear.
Right.
Please don't donate your underwear anyway. That you can just get rid of.
Right. And I think some people might even go out and get the fluffy towels and have the intention of getting rid of all the towels, but then they get home with the fluffy new ones and they see the old ones and they do that thing in their head where they're like, maybe I'll need an old one one day. Maybe I can use these in the car. And they like have the intention to replace, but they just add on. Instead of paring down, they're actually going up in number.
Exactly. So this principle became so abundant during our minimalism challenge. And just for clarity, the basic general guidelines of our challenge were this: that we would use what we had, that we would not buy any non-consumable goods. So we didn't buy clothes or shoes or furniture, but we did buy groceries and we bought light bulbs when they ran out. Not as special ones as John gets, but we did, in fact, have to replace light bulbs from time to time and printer paper and those types of things. The reason for that was that I recognized that we had so much and I had enough to get rid of 4 garbage bags full from one little section of cabinets. Yet, every time I went to the store, I was coming home with something that I hadn't planned on buying. And not because I'm a crazy shopaholic, but because that is the nature of the way that our culture is set up right now. Maybe you don't actually need new towels. Maybe you have fluffy, great towels at home, but you see some really, really pretty ones. And so even though you have fluffy, great ones and old, dirty ones, you have to get the new ones because they look pretty and they'll go perfectly with that color that you just painted in the bathroom. Now you don't only have 1 or 2 layers deep of stuff, but now you've added another layer and another, and it just like is a cycle that it will continue without us deciding that what we have is enough. And that principle that enough is a decision and not a specific amount is what sort of drove our whole challenge.
I feel like that's a really important change of mindset, this idea that enough is a decision.
I knew you were going to latch onto that. That's such a John sentence. It's not an amount, it's a decision.
Yeah. The whole reason that we wanted to do this wasn't just like a random like, oh, I think we should experiment with minimalism. That's trending on Twitter. Like, let's become minimalist.
Right.
We were feeling that we weren't necessarily living in alignment with some of our true values, which were to really appreciate the things that we already own, like just living in gratitude for the things that we have in our lives. And I think that it's easy to think that you do that, but then when you're off always trying to replace them with the better, shinier, newer, that doesn't feel a lot like gratitude anymore. And so we wanted to experiment with like, what if we just don't get anything else? Like, how much more grateful will we be for what we already have? And it turns out it's a lot. We also wanted to instill some values of patience, both in ourselves and in our children. And that's, patience is a hard thing to learn. And often we'll be teaching our kids about patience. You know, you go to the store and they want something and they don't need it. And so you talk about being patient and think of things you have at home that are the same. But in that same shopping trip, what if we see something that we want? And so we put it in the cart and don't think twice about it. And sometimes I think it's funny that like I wasn't exercising my patience in my own life as much as I was expecting my kids to. So it was kind of like it leveled the playing field as far as like I'm waiting for things, you're waiting for things. So it wasn't like a random shopping challenge. It was like a way to develop some really core characteristics and values in our family culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way to motivate yourself through something like this, like attach it to some sort of value you're trying to hold closer for yourself and the members of your family and, you know, pass on to your kids. I am curious how your kids did with a challenge like this. Like, how did you involve them or explain it to them? Because I think that's also a thing that people are nervous about compared to Kate's experiences. Like, how do I involve a whole family?
Yeah. So our kids did fantastic through the challenge and continue to in this kind of minimized lifestyle. I think that I didn't give them enough credit when we started out. I guess here's a couple things. One, as parents, our attitude really determines how our children take a lot of things. And so we were excited and we thought it was like going to be really fun. And we were like pumped up about this. We were really, really excited about it. And so our kids come into this like family meeting thinking like, whoa, something really cool's up because mom and dad are like really excited about this.
Or mom and dad have finally lost it.
Either or. So my kids at the time were 3, 5, and 7. So they were young. That also contributes to the way that they were sort of adaptable and flexible. My youngest son, the middle child, asked, so what if I want a new toy? And I says, okay, well, what do you think? If we're not going to go to the store and buy one, can you think of what we could do if you want a new toy? How could we get a new toy without going to the store and buying one? And so he started to list off things. Maybe we could paint some rocks and we could make like a tic-tac-toe. And you have a lot of stuff in your sewing room, Mom. Maybe we could like make a toy. And I was just like glowing because I'm like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, I want you to use your creativity. And like, we have all of the things that we need, like in our house, in my sewing craft supplies, and also like just out in nature. You take your kids on a hike, they don't complain the whole time that they don't have a toy on the hike with them. They just start playing with whatever's on the hike. And I felt like it was the same thing, that it opened up their minds to the ability to find what they needed in the environment they were in, which kids are so good at naturally anyway. And I think we sometimes inhibit that by putting flashing, beeping things in front of them rather than letting them kind of experiment with their imaginations. And I found that they played longer, better, and more creatively the more toys I sort of got rid of over the year.
Yeah. I feel like that's something, it's a process we've been going through. And a recent thing that came to mind for me is like, you know what, if our kids have less stuff, I can try to convey to them, like, they will have to spend less time cleaning up, which makes more time for playing.
Totally.
I'll let you know how that works out. I haven't tried
yet. Yeah, we'll see.
I think it's so true for us too, though. Like, I don't necessarily want to clean my whole house all the time. And the less stuff we have, and the less, you guys have talked about this a lot, but the less like livable space we have, like I think that there's votes for simplifying, and if it works, downsizing a little bit, and just recognizing that the things you own are the things you care for.
Yeah, I feel like it was Michaelyn Smith. She goes by The Nester. She's another blogger, and she wrote this awesome book about minimizing her home. And she said, I realized my job was stuff manager. And I was like, it's so true. Do we want to be stuff managers, or do we want to like enjoy our weekends and enjoy our evenings? And I feel the same way about our kids. Like, someone listening could twist this all up and say, you don't want your kids to play or have toys or make messes. How awful. It's not that. It's that we don't want to give them the job of stuff manager at age 5 and 9.
Totally. By the end of our challenge, our whole family mantra was less stuff, more adventure. And by paring down what we already owned, being really grateful for it, and then also being really, really picky from here on out about the things that we choose to add to our life, that frees us up to do whatever we want as a family. We can drop things and go on a weekend trip anytime we like. We, you know, not only because we have extra money in the bank from all the stuff that we're not buying, but because we have time, because we aren't also maintaining everything. And so if the choice actually came down to like buy this thing or go on this adventure, I'm going to choose the adventure every time. But we don't often get it on a platter as like either or. It's like the nuanced decisions that we make every day that determine whether we have that freedom to go experience the adventures and develop the relationships and spend the time as a family together that we want.
Yeah, I mean, almost very literally to that point, we've talked as a family this winter, because the way the school calendar lines up, we have a week that we could take a vacation after Christmas, like still be home for the holidays and see everyone, but then go somewhere. So we've talked about, as a family Christmas gift, instead of the physical things, let's go on a trip. And our kids are so excited about the trip. We brought it up like maybe last month, and they talk about it every day.
They talked about it on the way to the bus today. Like, they're so into it.
That's so fun. I'm so excited for you.
Well, you also talked a few minutes ago about downsizing. So that kind of leads me to my next question, because I wanted to get some sort of renovation tips from you, but not in the sense that people are probably thinking. Because one thing that I always admire watching your stories is you seem to maintain this cheery, upbeat attitude, even in the face of some pretty big DIY or renovation disasters. Like, I watched your stories about your ceiling falling down in your living room on top of you and your husband, and you were like laughing about it.
We were like laughing with you, and then we were like, but we sure as heck wouldn't have been laughing if it was our ceiling.
So I wanted to just pick your brain a little bit about how you maintain a positive attitude through your home renovations, because I know that's a thing that a lot of us struggle with.
Totally. So it is a weird thing to see the same exact scenario from the perspective of, oh my gosh, why is this happening to me? To knowing that bad things sometimes happen and you can't control it. The only thing that you can control is how you react to it and how you feel about it. And so I think that this is something that, first of all, I actively work on trying to have a positive attitude. And some of the just basic things that I do are that I do gratitude practices every day, and and I like intentionally focus on the things that are going right in my life so that I feel filled up by them. And that becomes a buffer to when the inevitable things that go wrong happen, that I can say, okay, well, that went wrong, but look at all these other incredible things that are happening in my life. Like, everything isn't just like weighted against me. The universe still has my back. I still am going to be fine. And specifically regarding our renovation, it was like every single week there was something. And this is just what happens in renovation. And with old homes, you know this, that we say a lot of the time, I'm going to look back on this and laugh someday. Or people will say that to you to try to cheer you up. Like, you're going to look back and laugh someday. And I guess I've kind of thought, why do I have to wait to look back and laugh? Like, why can't I enjoy the process through the hard stuff too? And I think that if we wait for the next thing to be over, or the next thing to get finished, or when we have this much money, or when we buy that next thing, if you are waiting for the thing to be finished and not enjoying the process, you are always waiting.
Yeah, I love what you said there, because I feel like once, I think I even said it on this podcast, I was going for a walk and I saw a dumpster outside someone's house. And my reaction was like, oh, I'm so jealous. That's so fun. When you have a dumpster, you're doing something really big. I wonder if they're doing a kitchen or a bathroom. That's so fun. And then I told my friend and she's like, you're nuts. Like, why are you are coveting a dumpster? And I'm like, I'm coveting the excitement and the potential. Like, the moment the dumpster is there, you're just getting started, but there's so much promise. And so I just remember in that moment thinking, if I'm going to be jealous of the dumpster when someone else has it, I really want to soak up when I have the dumpster. Put that on my tombstone, John.
We should put it on a t-shirt. Enjoy the dumpster.
I can't think of a more perfect place to end this conversation. Well, Miranda, thank you for all of your insights on everything. We will make sure in the show notes that everyone can find links to your blog and your Instagram and your book, More Than Enough, and your podcast.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. So again, if you want to check out any of Miranda's stuff, I will link all of it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. And next up we have We're Digging. We actually just had a weird event here in our house.
Maybe a second haunting.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to lean into the ghost theme too much, but we just had a picture frame fall upstairs, which seems like a very ghost thing to do.
It just jumped off the wall and shattered on the floor.
Well, we looked at it and the wire broke on the back, which has never happened to us.
Not in our entire lives has that happened, except when we were talking about being open to spooky but friendly ghosts.
Well, whatever it was, it changed what I'm going to dig this week, but I'll tell you after the break. Anytime you've heard us mention this week's sponsor, it's probably because Social Print Studio is where we've been ordering those personalized page a day calendars for my family for years now, like way back before they became sponsors of the podcast.
Yeah, and something people don't realize is that we didn't actually find them because of those calendars. It was actually because of some posters that we bought for our second book way back in 2015.
Yeah, do you guys remember how we used to take those weekly photos of our kids when they were babies? Social Print Studio was like the only place we could find that made it easy to print a big, high quality poster of all 52 weekly photos, like nicely gridded together.
Yeah, and they've got other wall art printing options too. So there's that collage poster we ordered, but they also do framed prints, oversized prints, metal and wood prints, even these cool oversized photo booth strips.
And their Print Studio app makes it super easy to order straight from your phone. Like, you can literally import your photos straight from your camera roll or your Instagram feed and send off your order without ever having to touch a computer. Plus, Social Print Studio is giving our listeners 15% off their order with code YHL15 now through December 9th. So check them out at socialprintstudio.com/YHL or just download the Print Studio app. Again, that code is YHL15 for 15% off. So what I'm now digging this week is the thing that we just put to use cleaning up the broken
/ haunted picture frame.
What I'm digging is a wet dry vacuum or a utility vacuum, or I always just call it a shop vac. I know shop vac is a brand name and I don't literally own the shop vac brand vacuum, but that's what we call it around the house.
And it is so useful, way beyond DIY. So like, listen to me, if you're a person who's like, I don't demo bathrooms.
I don't have a workshop.
You know. We use it so often for so many things, like when the picture frame jumped off the wall.
Yeah, because we had little bits of broken glass, like we got the big ones up by hand, but there are little bits and I didn't want to use our normal vacuum because I didn't want to bust that up. It's not meant for things like that. So I got our little shop vac out because I already had it handy for the bathroom demo. And what these things are, if you're not familiar, you've probably seen one, but they are a heavier duty vacuum because they have a long, wide hose so you can suck up all sorts of things like construction debris, nails, small pieces of wood, sawdust, and they don't go through all these crazy filters and bags like a normal vacuum goes through. So it makes it really easy to empty up this bucket of construction debris. So I use it a lot. I usually keep it in my shed. So if I'm cutting wood, I can get all my sawdust up. But we've moved it more recently up to the bathroom because there's been so much demo dust that after we're done working and we've moved all the big stuff out of the way, swept up stuff into piles, it's really easy to use the shop vac to clean it up because you'll get every last bit as opposed to using like a dustpan and a broom where you're always going to have like a little bit of a haze left.
Right. I don't think I've ever had so many comments on a post as when I shared the bathroom half demoed. I mean, we had knocked down walls. There was a bunch of dust and then there wasn't because we cleaned it. And people kept saying, that is the cleanest demo zone I've ever seen. Or like, what are your secrets? And I also love that it's wet dry. Like, think about that for a second. If you've ever dropped like a jar of jelly on the floor or a pickle jar on the floor and it's wet and glass, or if you have sawdust that's like a little bit damp, or like, you know, what's a great example? When we cut tile, we have wet little pieces of tile. You can suck that up with the shop vac and that would straight up ruin your vacuum cleaner. Yeah. So it's really versatile. It just basically sucks everything into this bucket-like center and you empty the bucket.
Yeah, it's the only way that I felt comfortable that we could still shower in the bathroom up until this week. Of course, we're going to demo the shower. But, you know, we still wanted to use that bathroom in its half state of demo. And I wanted to make sure it was clean to step out of the shower and not be stepping into a dirt pile because that would kind of undo the shower a little bit.
It really would.
So I'll put a link to the one that I've got in the show notes. There are big, expensive models. I don't think they have to be. Like, I don't need a million attachments. Like, the basic one I have has a few, and I think it does the job just fine. So again, that will be at younghouselove.com/podcast.
And this week, I was going to dig something else, but since John changed his, I took over his We're Digging, because yeah, it's a thing we really love, and it's a true crime podcast. It's called The Clearing. It's, I think, maybe like an 8 or 10 episode series.
I think it's 8. We're not done yet because we're working through it slowly.
No spoilers, guys. But the thing that's different about this one is it revolves around a daughter who always thought her dad had something to do with certain murders that occurred when they lived in certain areas. And so it's the podcast host sort of going back in time with her and walking her through certain memories and connecting them to things that happened in the news and basically getting to the bottom of whether or not he was responsible for some of these cases or all of these cases or none of these cases. And from a person who really likes detective work and storytelling, it definitely has that going for it.
Yeah, it's not your typical salacious true crime murder podcast because it has this sort of emotional layer to it of hearing the daughter sort of come to terms with what her dad has done, but also at the same time, in a weird way, like defending his reputation, because there's at least one particular episode that stands out to me where they talk about how he gets blamed for a lot of other grisly crimes. And she wants to set the record straight that like, he's not a good person, but he also wasn't this person either. So it just has a lot of interesting layers to it. And I thought it was really nicely done. And so if you like that type of podcast, I feel like this is a really interesting one to add to your queue.
And also the daughter reminds me of Cyndi Lauper. That's who I picture when she talks because she has a very specific voice. I know it's not Cyndi Lauper.
That is a really weird thing to layer onto this.
But she seems very nice. I have a lot of empathy for her. I think one of the reasons we really love this podcast is because the storytelling is from such a unique point of view.
Yeah, that's why I think we're kind of dragging out our listening to it, because we want to make sure we're listening only times when both of us can really pay attention.
Right, and when the kids are not listening. Too creepy for children.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
Hey, and next week, we're going to share the roundup of little life hacks and sticking point solutions that you guys have been sending our way.
Yes, they have been so fascinating to hear, and I'm excited to share them. Like, it might be a 10-hour episode.
Well, but there also is time to sneak in a few more if you want to send one to us before next week's episode.
Yes, and you know we love hearing what you do while you listen, like Andrea, who said she was listening to John talk about scrubbing the sink with baking soda while she was, wait for it, scrubbing her sink with baking soda.
And don't forget to check out our show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. This week, I've put in some of our favorite episodes of Miranda's podcast, where she dives deeper into some of the topics we talked about today.
And I'm going to throw in a peek at our progress in the bathroom after our busy week of work. A lot has changed in there.
Later.
Bye.
Mystery solved. They're not ghosts. I can now confirm ghosts are not real.
Until the next time we have a run-in.
Yes, but we did have a little bit of a scare.
Yeah, we did.
Might have peed a little bit. Okay, not really.
Right on the insulation. Soaked it right up.
Gross.